If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall, as you probably know by now, is a lecture series that takes place in a bar in the city of Toronto. At Trampoline Hall, people give lectures on all kinds of subjects. The one rule is that they cannot speak on subjects on which they are professionally expert. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. This podcast often contains mature language, and this episode is no exception. The title of the lecture is I Was a Public Speaking Champion, and the lecturer is Salvatore Antonio.
Honorable judges, esteemed guests, fellow opponents, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, my name is Salvatore Antonio, and this evening I will be speaking about how I was a public speaking champion. That little intro, by the way, that was the standard salutation that we used in actual speech competitions, acknowledging the audience in order of importance, and then ending with the title or subject of the speech laid out in one sentence, with a maximum use of one piece of punctuation within the sentence. Again, honorable judges, sure, esteemed guests, Sheila, fellow opponents, but not really, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, blah, 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 blah. Okay, maybe the word champion is a bit much, but the truth is, yes, for 3 years in the late 80s, I excelled in oral communications. That's what it says on the ribbons I won. Oral communications. I won many public speaking competitions, placing first in at least 20, going from school auditoriums through to provincial arenas. And I say at least 20 because, well, frankly, I can't remember a lot of the specifics around my oral era. I mean, it was 30 years ago. I mean, I do know that I won many trophies and medals and $50 cash awards. These, no joke, these are the surviving few that made it through the numerous moves. I know that two boxes full of these were dumped by my father into a Goodwill donation box many years ago because, Lord knows, those in need would like a trophy. Six wood-mounted plaques with my name inscribed on them were lovingly bound together with masking tape by my mother and sold at a garage sale. One can only imagine a use for those. Now, neither parent actually asked me if they could get rid of them, by the way. Yeah, it was just assumed that I had no need for them anymore. And after I cycled through the rage that comes from such an assumption, I realized that they were probably right. See, my period of public speaking excellence was not just about the awards. It was important because it marked the first time in my life that I actually felt really good at something. Something that allowed me to experience the first thrill of applause. Something that allowed me to be excused from school during the day and be chauffeured to a neighboring school's gym or library like the verbal show pony I was. But most importantly, public speaking allowed me to gain the respect of my classmates, even from the prematurely macho preteen Genos I was usually terrified of. Yeah, that's Sal. He's a bit of a fairy, but he talks good. I was 11 when it started. The year was 1986. And I was in grade 6 at St. Matthew's Catholic School in Markham, Ontario. At that time, I was, to put it mildly, a blessed disaster, complete with bad skin, too many teeth, over-gelled spiked hair, and a prepubescent voice that was routinely mistaken on the phone for my 17-year-old sister. My fashion sense at that time was still forming. For years, there was a framed newspaper clipping that my parents hung proudly in our living room. It was a giant photo of me that they ran in the Markham Economist and Sun. In it, I'm clutching one of these trophies. I just won it proudly, and I'm wearing a very loose acrylic blend Cosby sweater from the Woolco department store, and it's pretty close to off the shoulder. My high-waisted jeans are, of course, safety-pinned up to my knees, and I basically look like a lesbian poli-sci major working weekends at American Apparel. But see, I was the real deal disaster, without a drop of irony. I don't think I know what irony is. Terrifyingly earnest in my pursuit of cool, there was way too many photos. A good introduction should grab the attention of the audience and then quickly give them an idea of what's going to be discussed, but also an idea of the person who's delivering the speech and their credibility on the subject. Formality should be reserved for the opening salutation and respected when constructing the skeleton of the speech, but that formality cannot creep into the tone of delivery, or else it will distance the listener. A good public speaker should adopt a familiar tone so that the audience forgets at times that they are in fact listening to a speech. They should feel as though they are listening to a friend who also happens to be an amazing raconteur. I read somewhere that for most people, the number one fear is public speaking, with the number two fear being death. I will tell you that even years after making all these speeches and then my current career as an actor, speaking in front of thousands of people in one way or another, fear never really disappears from the equation. You just rearrange the order a bit so that you can operate in spite of it. Believe it or not, I am scared right now. Not just nervous, and no, not just anxious. Pretty fucking scared. Mostly about forgetting my words. That's why I have these. I use a 16-point font sans serif, and I print them on cardstock so that my shaking hand doesn't betray me as easily as they would with regular flimsy paper. Tips from the top. My first real attempt at speech writing actually took place in grade 5 when it was assigned by my teacher, Miss Scalzitti. A wonderfully scented, overly made-up woman with huge hair who routinely wore shiny dresses and high heels to school. I adored her. The subject I chose for my first speech was poltergeists. The supernatural phenomenon, not the movie. Well, that first speech was pretty much a failure. The problem with it was that it was just really boring. Informative, yes, but boring. And I recall delivering that first speech in front of my class in almost absolute silence. Part of that was because Miss Scalzitti had a thing against clapping. She had an ear injury of some sort that made the sound excruciating for her. I'm not making this up. And so our class had to learn to snap or nod in appreciation. I mean, you can't make this shit up. So after rambling on about German ghosts for 5 minutes, I looked up from my blue cue cards to a class of bored 10-year-olds nodding like zombies or trying to snap as loud as they could. I didn't make it to the gym for the school finals that year, needless to say. But Miss Galzitti pulled me aside after class and asked why I hadn't chosen a more lively subject. She went on to explain that she felt like I was trying to sound like someone else, someone far more serious than the Sal she knew. Scalzitti told me that the biggest thing missing from my speech was me, my sense of humor, my penchant for the dramatic. According to her, these were the most important ingredients I was missing. I mean, who knew? The main body of the speech is the most difficult part. Keeping an audience engaged requires stakes and raising the tension as you progress through the speech. While the main body is made up of multiple sections, or stories in this case, it is important to think about contrast between the good and bad of your subject matter and contrast the two with examples. So, after my poltergeist... Oh, pop that bee. After my poltergeist flop, I took Miss Scalzitti's advice to bring more me, specifically funny me, to the next speech. The opportunity came the next year in grade 6 when my new teacher, Mr. Rosettis, announced our unit on public speaking. I realized the perfect topic had been percolating in me all year. I rushed home and I wrote the whole thing in one weekend. It just poured out of me. The topic? Life's embarrassing moments. Life's Embarrassing Moments was less of an educational speech, but rather a collection of preteen situations in which I suffered public humiliation. It included tripping in class, shirts worn inside out, getting a nosebleed during a wedding, and other equally innocuous and naive examples. I mean, the first time I delivered the speech in front of my class, I knew I had a winner. I discovered that following my instincts yielded great results, like laughter. A new reality for me, where everyone was laughing because of me, not at me. And there was a power there. A power that was connective and positive. I coasted through that speech like I knew what I was doing. Like it was second nature. I was hooked. My class cheered, Rosettis looked genuinely impressed, and I moved forward. I'm sure I grew an inch taller that day. After the class win, I went on to represent the intermediate level in the gymnasium, and this time in front of my entire school. I won't bore you with all the details of my victory, but needless to say, I won first place, and suddenly I became a bit of a grade school celebrity. Winning my school competition meant that I would go on to the York Region Separate School Board Public Speaking Finals, which took place the next month. So for the next 3 weeks after school, I worked on my winning Life's Embarrassing Moments speech, this time with a coach, none other than the wonderful Miss Scalzitti. The two of us would rehearse twice a week in the music room, and she would help me refine my delivery by teaching me about things like emphatic gesture and vocal coloring. She would say things like, "You're going to be amazing." And because I felt like she really meant it, I realized for the first time I could be amazing. I will always treasure those afternoons with Miss Bettina Scalzitti, my first adult friend. Anyhow, when the day of the big competition came, it began with a special shout-out over the PA system during the morning announcements, where it was suggested, because I went to a Catholic school, that everyone keep me in their prayers as I represented St. Matthew's in the York Region Finals. No pressure there. Everyone in my class whooped and hollered. Mr. Rosettis clapped me on the back like I was heading into battle. It felt good. Sadly, when it came time for me to go, it wasn't Miss Scalzitti who would be taking me. Instead, it was my vice principal, Mrs. Charlene James. She came to collect me from class. Now, Mrs. James was feared by everyone. As vice principal, it fell on her desk to be in charge of disciplinary action, warnings, phone calls to parents, detentions, and of course, the rare and dreaded suspension. Hers was the office you were called to if you were in major shit. Well, when she appeared at my classroom door wearing her car-length silver fox coat with her purse hanging off her shoulder, the class went silent, and I had to remind myself that I was not leaving with Mrs. James because I was in trouble, but because I was a champion. That's right. I was simply being escorted to another victory. In the staff parking lot, Mrs. James used her keychain to remotely unlock the doors to her fancy BMW. This is 1986, y'all. The inside of her car was wood panel details and cream-colored leather, and it smelled like an ashtray and Oscar de la Renta perfume. And as we drove to the other school where the finals were taking place, Mrs. James did her best to turn my nerves into excitement, churning out the usual nonsense about picturing the audience in their underwear. Not so useful for focusing an 11-year-old boy, I might add. Where the fuck was Miss Scalzitti when I really needed her? I imagine that she was sitting in her classroom, sitting at her desk, thinking of me as her students read to themselves. Anyway, my VP chaperone and I registered in the lobby of the hosting school and then made our way into the gigantic auditorium. It was filled with a completely foreign student body. I mean, these were not my school friends. We were on enemy territory now, and these were my opponents. I made my way toward the stage where there was an actual podium, 12 chairs lined up behind it. I mean, this walk seriously felt like it was my Green Mile. At this point, we are approaching what should be the climax of this speech. Structurally, the climax is the moment of maximum emotional intensity that powerfully demonstrates the key message of the speech, the key moment that you've been building to for your audience, a summit, if you will, where speaker and audience can stand together and marvel at the view together and say in unison, "Ah." But at this point, I'm not really sure what the key message of this speech is. Is there a message, or is it just a collection of memories from 3 decades ago when I discovered I could speak effectively from prepared notes and win things for it? This key moment I've been building to suddenly seems really anticlimactic. I mean, the speech is called How I Was a Public Speaking Champion, so yeah, I won. Surprise, surprise. I overcame my fear. I spoke better than I ever had before, and I clinched first place. Mrs. Charlene James went so far as to hug me in congratulations so that my face was buried in her crunchy perm that smelled of DeMaurier and Final Net. On the drive back, we drove to a Dairy Queen where she bought me a peanut butter parfait. En route to the school, she pressed another button that opened the sunroof in her car, and I felt like a triumphant emperor being brought back to Rome. From there, I went on to enter and win many more competitions with my well-worn life's embarrassing moments speech. I cleaned up at the Catholic Women's League Oral Arts. I nabbed the Lions Club Cup. I crept steadily up the Kiwanis Circuit. That speech got a lot of mileage, and by the end of that year, my cue cards had curled and torn around the edges, and the sweat from my palms had blurred some of the ink. My bedroom had filled with these gold plastic cups and figurines, and I was pretty sure that I had found my thing. I had learned from Miss Scalzitti that public speaking was a wonderful skill to have, that it could really serve me if I decided to go into something like teaching or politics or something really crazy like acting. Little did we know I'd choose the latter. Well, see, once you hit your climax, the speech should really be nearing its end. Using the summit metaphor, no audience wants to go all the way back down the mountain with you. They'd rather get airlifted off the top whilst they still have the buzz of reaching the goal. This is what a great speech writer should aim for, but what the hell was my goal again, honestly? As much as I would have liked to offer a speedy descent, there is still one more important story before I can zero in on the close. What you need to know is that because of my life's embarrassing moments successes, I became known as the speech champion, not only in my school, but on my street and at home, too. My parents were the ones who had to cart me around to the numerous competitions, and we crisscrossed Ontario in my dad's Cadillac Eldorado, heading to Legion halls and community centers and church basements. And after witnessing so many wins and being told by others that they should be so proud of their son, I realized that they no longer viewed me as just the weird baby of the family. I was now the son who could do something they would never dare to. And for a short while, this was worth more to me than any of the trinkets I was winning. The next year, I was a shoo-in to win, yes? So I wrote my speech over the summer break so that I could be perfectly rehearsed by the time public speaking came along in October. My topic for this new speech was a love, colon, is it a blessing or a curse? No joke. I was a 12-year-old virgin, who had never been kissed, speaking about love. No idea where that topic came from and can't remember the content. But I was positive that it would bring down the house. I built it so that it would bring down the house. Winning everything the year before had made me a bit, I don't know, cocky. And so I filled this speech with a lot of tricks that I had learned. I really used my voice to effect. And I discovered the power of the pregnant pause. I had become an oratory army of one. And yes, I did clean up in the competition circuit, ending up at some Ontario regional final thingy. This competition was my biggest one. And if I won this competition, I would go on to represent Ontario at the national level in PEI or something. I can't remember where. I just knew that it would mean getting on a plane. And I was dead set on clinching the prize. I remember that my parents and I had to drive very far to get where it was happening, and there was a veritable blizzard that we were going through. When we finally parked and I finally got in and took my place on the very large stage, I ended up seated beside a competitor who I'd come up against before. Her name was Mary Ellis, and she was good. She had come in second behind me the year before, and I remember thinking back then that her speech had actually been better than mine, but that I had won because I had the charisma she lacked. See, know thy product. Mary Ellis was a dour 12-year-old girl, obviously intelligent and very confident, but a bit too serious. Her hairstyle was a home-cut Dorothy Hamill-type bowl cut, and she dressed like she might be a tad Amish. None of that really mattered, though. I knew she was smarter than me, and I felt threatened by the mix of her brain and her air of self-assuredness. Anyhow, we all picked numbers to decide the running order, and I ended up in the second last slot to be followed by none other than Mary Ellis. When it was my turn to go, I brought out the big guns, so much so that I came dangerously close to going over the allotted 7 minutes. When I was finished, I was exhausted. The audience gave me a sustained applause, and I sat back down knowing I had left it all on the stage. Mary Ellis offered me a tight smile as we waited for her cue to proceed, and finally the little bell rung, and up she went. As she began speaking, I couldn't believe my ears. Mary Ellis had made it to this level with a speech on the history of cereal. No fucking joke. Cereal, the breakfast food. How? Why? Right from the start, though, there was something different about Mary. It was as though she had gained even more confidence over the past year, and on top of that was displaying real charisma and a refined sense of humor, one that had the adults laughing their asses off. There was no denying that Mary was killing it with her cereal speech. The audience and judges were eating it up, and I felt my wind slowly slipping away. By the time she reached her close, I was so entertained and interested by goddamn cereal that I'd forgotten that she was my competition. With the speeches done, we took a short break for the judges to deliberate, and I could barely finish my oatmeal cookie. I looked out into the audience to my parents, and I saw my mother smiling with her dead eyes as my father avoided my gaze. And I knew I had lost to the girl with the cereal. We were called back, and then they began announcing placements. Third place, not me. Runner-up, someone else. First place, Mary Ellis with a history of cereal. I offered her the most sincere congratulations I could muster, and she responded by telling me that she thought my speech was funny. Funny. I grabbed my participation ribbon and rushed my parents out the door. I don't remember saying a single word the entire ride home. They offered their obligatory consolations, but I didn't care. I knew Mary Ellis deserved to win, and I also knew that I was done with public speaking, at least at the competitive level. The close can be the hardest part of speech writing. It's the final section. It's where you're supposed to hit home with your action point, the key thing you want your audience to do differently as a result of listening to your speech. But I have to admit, I don't really know what that is. Often the close is where speakers end up undermining the power of the rest of their speech by overwriting in an attempt to arrive at a memorable conclusion that captures the essence of the speech. That might be the trap I find myself in now. You see, I find myself circling above all these memories and lessons learned with a greater admiration for the 11-year-old me who just went after it without worrying so much, without worrying nearly as much as the 40-year-old me who was trying to write this speech. How is it that even after all that experience, the reality of having to get up and speak in front of a group of strangers filled me with fresh terror? The gold plastic coating has begun flaking off my surviving trophies. One can only hope that the rewards outlast the awards, I guess. I have one piece of advice for speaking to a room full of people. Instead of picturing them in their underwear, try picturing them as 11-year-old versions of yourself, and it suddenly becomes an act of forgiveness, not fear.
Salvatore Antonio.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm ready. Are there any questions? Yes, you, ma'am, yes.
Love, is it a blessing?
Is love a blessing?
I still don't know the answer.
All right, next question. Yes, yes, you in the back.
Yeah, so the woman who won the speaking competition, what was her name?
Mary? The woman, Mary? I like the 11-year-old woman was Mary.
She was a woman back then, Mary Ellis. I used all real names.
Mary Ellis. What did you want to know about her?
So where is she now?
Where is she now?
Yeah. Do you know, I really had to stop myself from like Googling or Facebooking these people because I was terrified of what they would look like now and that it would like break my image of them because right. She is like obviously imprinted. I don't know where she is now.
Is she here, Mary?
Oh my, if she was here, I would lose it. Imagine if they all came and sat in the audience. Like, Skill City, Rosetta.
When you have to imagine the audience as those 11-year-olds, but they actually are those 11-year-olds. All right, so we don't know. We don't know where Mary Ellis is, but if you want to find her, her name is Mary Ellis. And she's good at speaking and less dour than she used to be, so that can help you narrow it down. Any other questions? Anything else you would like to know? Yes, over here. Yeah, thank you. Did you keep in touch with Miss Scalziti?
No, I didn't. I don't keep in touch with anybody. I mean, I didn't keep in touch with her. She was still there when I was in grade 8, and we had a special relationship, nothing untoward. But I mean, she had a soft spot for me, and I really enjoyed her. But that was it. After I went to a different high school outside of that district, and that was it. She was special.
She was really special.
All
right. Yes, yes, you sir.
Would you consider turning this into a feature film?
Do you mean like with real 11-year-old? Isn't there like a documentary about...
I have no idea.
Oh.
There's one about some people are like, oh, there's one about spelling bees, but that's totally different.
I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. The real deal, like the real competitions are so full of drama, I don't know if you even need to dramatize them. It's like the stakes are so high at that. I mean, what are you pitching me?
Are you?
Just kidding. I'm kidding.
It's just so visual. The characters are so well drawn. It just feels like I want to see the film.
You want to see that movie now. So you just want the movie to be produced so that you can see it. So I think that's why all the movies get made. They're just like, just come back and show me this in 6 years and $12 million. Or...
Thank you.
And all right, so as far as we know, yes, you wouldn't say no to making a movie.
I'm right? Like, oh, we're not having this conversation. Really? Talk to me. After the show.
All right, yeah. Yes, in the back, yes.
Did you keep a copy of your speeches?
Do you have
no.
a copy of your speeches?
No. Okay, so remember, this is like 86 to 88.
Right.
I didn't get a computer, no joke, till about 2000. I was right. Like a late bloomer. There was no, I wrote them by hand. And there was more like liquid paper than there was ink. Because you know when like you screwed up like halfway down a cue card, you're not going to start over again. No, they were cue cards. And I don't know. I did keep them for a while, but like I said, there was a lot of moving of my things and throwing out of my things while I was away in Montreal. And I think they went.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so no, they're not. They're
sadly.
Not. Did you want them? Whose question was it? Were you curious? Like, did you want to see them? Or?
Love to read them too because I don't have a good memory, so I can't remember exactly what I said. But I'm sure they were very colorful.
All right. Yes, you, ma'am, over there. Yes.
So, who do you like hear and speak publicly now?
Who do you like to listen to public speaking wise nowadays?
Oh, jeez. I don't know. See, the problem is this, is when you've like learned about public speaking or a performance and you figure out the formula, it's really hard to just enjoy someone doing it without thinking of how they're doing what they're doing. So for me, like when everyone's like, Obama is such a good speaker, I'm like, I mean, yes, he's not like what Harper was, an automaton, but I mean like the emphatic gesture and the like stretching out of, I'm just like, yeah, I get it.
He's no Mary Ellis.
He is no Mary Ellis. I like listening to just like regular people speak publicly, not people that are overtrained.
It's a weird question. It's a weird question because it's one of the funny things about that thing about like the public speaking competition for kids as they're kids, and you're like, oh, I'll become good at this thing, public speaking. But as an adult, like you're not like, oh, let's go see some public speaking.
Yeah.
Let's go watch. A, you know,
it's an idea.
You guys. Like you guys are the only people in the world who do that. So good on you. But it's weird. It's not like a thing. It's not
totally.
A thing.
Well, you know what's funny is like when Sheila asked me to do something for this, I gave her a list of three things, and this was the one which I believe in. Full caps, and all caps, I was just like, I do not want to do a speech on this, but I just need to tell you. Because it was more of a story. I was like, I used to do this when I was a kid, and of course she's like, that's the speech. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, that's pretty much the premise.
I can't say no to Sheila, so.
That's pretty much the premise of Trampoline Hall. It's based on people doing things they don't want to do because they can't say no to Sheila. it's a powerful force in the world. Anything else? Anything else? Yes, you, ma'am, yes. What's more important, the writing or the performance?
Because
your writing was good. What are you saying? But your performance was like...
Well, no, you're absolutely right. Because you know what? Having this to read off of, I don't feel too good about. I was having some anxiety about this earlier because the fact of it is I had to finish writing this about like 2 p.m. this afternoon. And so it was not committed to memory. So I would say what's more important than the writing is actually the communication of it, which you would call performance. I think that's more important. If you're passionate about a subject... and your goal is to communicate that passion to an audience, that's way more important than all the facts and figures, at least to me. Does that answer your question?
So the performance is the answer. More
so
than
I kind of failed on the performance end because of the paper.
Yeah, I saw people were pretty bummed out about that. everyone was like, dude, just email it to us, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. Yes, you, sir. What did you wear for your public speaking engagements?
That's so weird that you asked that because I had kind of like two outfits because I didn't have a lot of clothes. So I had like the same two outfits that I would kind of recycle, but it was always a loose acrylic blend sweater. Those really worked well for me. You know, and I would just pair them up. Like, there was the gray one with the black jean, and then there was one that was kind of like pumpkin popped that I would wear with the blue jean, and I just kind of switched them up. But it was always usually a sweater and jean.
That sounds good. Does that answer your question?
Which outfit won?
I don't remember. Oh, they all won. I mean...
Yes. Do you mean that? Look at all these. Look at all these trophies.
One box of four... You know, this is honestly the box that came in, and look what it says. Box one,
one of four. Oh, my God. Trophies.
And then basement.
Box one of four, basement. Oh, my God. That's insane.
And my birthing partners went and gave the rest of them away.
That's crazy. Do you know what it just occurred to me? The thing that occurred to me about the... Not to come back to the movie thing, but when the guy was like, do you want to make the movie about this? And the thing that occurred to me about it as a movie, and also as a story, that's very confusing to me in terms of like what is the lesson that we're supposed to draw from this, is that the standard movie plot is like there's the kid and he tries to be good and he fails and then he fails again and he fails again and he fails again and he keeps trying and finally succeeds. But your story is, I did this thing from the very first time I did it. I was a complete champion. It came easy to me all the time. And the very first time I didn't come in first place, I gave up forever. And that is a weird, weird lesson for the young people.
Anyone who knows me personally is just like, that's so him. I'm just like, I will not fail in public. I would sooner pull out.
He's like, incredibly talented, but no grit whatsoever. Just like...
I was a total brat who was like, well, if I'm not winning, I'm not playing. Mary Ellis can have the damn cup.
Does this like echo
in
other...
Put some cereal in it, bitch. Yeah, I was like... Yeah,
no. Are there other areas in life where you're incredibly talented and could have done something had you not given up at the very first sign of failure?
Oh. What was the question
It's an easy question, dude. No, I don't know why. Are there other things that are like that for you? Are there other things where you're like, yeah, I'm really good at that, but I just gave up
Of
failure?
Well, it's not just failure, it's the I don't deal with expectations. Right. So I'm like, if I don't think I can deliver, I would sooner like not go. I do that routinely with auditions.
Right.
I work as an actor, and if I don't feel like I'm going to be putting the best thing in the audition, I will fake an illness.
Right,
and like not go.
Just like not go. So
I would sooner not go. My agent's always like, just go. You never know. I'm like, no, I know. Like, and if it's not good, I don't want them to see it.
All right. Okay.
So yes.
All right. Okay. Good. Well, it's a lesson. It's a lesson we can all. Do you feel that's a lesson we can all learn from?
I don't know. There are lessons to be learned all around this, maybe. But just give up as soon as you realize that you're failing.
That seems like a nice contrast to the danger of the elevated ending that you worry about. So maybe we'll end on that.
Give up.
Just give up. Okay, we'll wrap it up there. Salvatore Antonio. Can we leave your trophies up on the stage?
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hedy and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Sheila Hedy. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Trampoline Hall is a Sumo Audio podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review or positive rating on iTunes. It really helps a lot. It helps us reach more listeners. I'm Misha Goldman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.